The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by the Sunday Business Post. From award-winning analysis to inspiring culture, the Sunday Business Post is Ireland's most substantial read.
Reports that Oliver has been ridiculed by fellow chefs for blaming Brexit. Aldo Zilli, who runs an Italian restaurant chain, said his profits were up 10% since the Brexit vote. And Andrew Bridgen, a Conservative MP, said Oliver was using Brexit as an easy scapegoat and that he should look a little closer to home. I'd say there'll be an awful lot of that coming up. I said, no, you didn't. Yes, you did. No, you didn't. That kind of thing. Anyway, many Irish people have been to London and are well and truly familiar with the city and the tube and the underground and all of that. It's a magnificent service that's so dependable. My next guest had just moved to London to pursue a career in fashion design when she was in one of these tunnels and was shot in a random gun attack. Emma Sheridan, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Marion. Thank you for having me.
You're a fashion designer.
I am, yeah.
And you decided to go to London to develop the career.
Yeah, I'd got my degree in NCAD and I'd kind of done a few internships both here and in London itself as well. And I decided to make the final move to go over and get some proper experience over there. So I was full of ambition and excitement for the journey ahead of me at the time.
And how did it go and how was it going?
Yeah, it was going well. I was only there a few months, so I didn't know very many people yet. I'd just become friends with some people from work. So we moved over kind of just around Christmas time and I got a job around February. So I'd been in the job about 3 months when all of this happened. So I was quite excited about what was going on. It was the first time me and my boyfriend at the time, who's now my husband, had moved in together as well. So we were quite enjoying kind of being in the big city and it was all very exciting.
Yeah.
Very exciting time, yeah.
And what happened on the day?
So I was in work as normal and then a friend of mine that I'd made friends with in the office decided she'd walk me to the tube station. So we literally went to the station and said goodbye at the entrance to Finsbury Park's tube station.
People will have heard of Finsbury Park because there was a very famous imam there, isn't that right?
Yes, yeah. So I had just put my Oyster card on the side and the station is very much sort of lots of tunnels to get into the main part of the station. So I just walked in on my way home. We're really, really busy. So it was all the commuters coming back from work, that kind of time in the night. So it was very, very busy kind of time. And then what happened was two men there was a bit of a kerfuffle going on down in the tube station and you could see them running towards me and they ran past and as they passed me then one of them started firing gunshots at the other one. So it was very kind of scary moment. There was a lot of commotion. Everybody just started running into the tube station. So we all just started running as fast as we could in towards the station away from the gunshots.
So they were running out of the station.
They were leaving the station, yeah. And we all started just running back into the station at the time.
Would you not be afraid there'd be more trouble in the station?
I think it was just the direction we were kind of working and he was at the entrance. So he was at the kind of entrance to the tunnel. So we were kind of running in to sort of get away from, otherwise he'd have been running towards him, sort of, I suppose.
Right.
So.
And what happened to you?
So I was running with everybody else and then I felt something in my back and I put my hand up and I could feel like a hole through my clothes and I could actually feel the bullet kind of sticking in my skin. So my imagination just kicked off and I immediately just imagined like the worst, that I was dying and I was like thinking of things you've seen on TV and all of this. And then I was really worried that there was other shots because he was still shooting. So I was worried like how many of these are in me. So I just kept running with everybody else. And when I got to the end of the tunnel, a man that works in the station, I just grabbed him, pulled him around the corner and I sat down and told him what had happened. But I was really lucky. Two women came over to me. One of them was, because I was sort of, at the time, it was more just that I was really shocked and I was sort of panicking at that stage.
Yeah.
I thought I was like, this is my last
breath.
Moments kind
yes.
of thing.
Yeah.
And then these two women came over. One of them was a nurse and one of them was a medical student. And they had like
that
a bag of
fortuitous.
Lots of sort of stuff in their bag, medical equipment. And They cut my clothes off my back and found the bullet, and they actually got the bullet out of my back
there and then.
So yeah, I was really lucky, and they really reassured me then. They kind of calmed me down, said there's only one, it's not gone in too far, all this kind of stuff. So I was able to kind of start relaxing a little bit once I kind of met them. And then the tube station just got completely shut down. So London is great for, I think, as soon as an emergency happens, like there was loads of shutters coming down everywhere. There was, within minutes, there was like police with dogs everywhere, and an ambulance was coming to kind of pick me up, sort of thing. So I was really, like, it was very strange because I was the only person, even though they'd shot quite a lot fired quite a lot of shots into the station, I was the only one.
You were the only one.
At that time. So, yeah, and then I was very much sort of just in shock. And once I kind of realised physically I was kind of going to be okay, it had kind of brushed off my arm and gone sort of diagonally into my back. So it kind of got stuck behind my ribs, in my muscles. So my arm was very sore, and then my back. So it's more, so I was kind of lucky in that way, the angle it got me at, I suppose.
And I gather straight away it affected your mental health.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think for me, physically, it was quite, I was really lucky. So although I was very bruised,
well,
and very
it's not
sore,
lucky to get shot at.
It's sort of like, I think my mind kept thinking of what if, like the what ifs, and like how lucky I was that it hadn't gone through. It was right behind my heart at the time. So, I think my imagination was just sort of thinking about, like, well, if this is one in a million, what other one in a million things can happen to you? How random things can happen any time of the day, walking down the street. I became very afraid for my safety. Sort of the world became a very sort of scary place. So I found quite immediately, although my physically I was okay, I was able to go home that night from the hospital, and I became like a crime scene then. So I was very much part of the police and the investigation around it at that time. But then mentally, it was more like I was having lots of nightmares. I was finding it very hard to leave the apartment. I kind of went into a very dark place, sort of panic attacks if I was kind of out and about in the street.
That really inhibits life, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really started taking over. Like, immediately I wanted to get back to work, and I was really frustrated about it because I was so angry that this had happened, and I didn't know anyone in the city. So I was kind of toying with the idea of, should we move home, things like that, at the time. But then we kind of all decided between us, and we kind of got advice from some people as well, that it was better to stay and to face it and to kind of go through the system over there.
And did you ever go back on the tube?
Well, I did eventually. So for the first, I went back to work. It took me about a month to get back to getting to work again. And I was getting the bus, and I lived miles away from the office. So it was taking me ages. My husband was bringing me to the bus station, the bus stop, and helped me get on the bus. And he was kind of walking me through to my job and things like that, just because I'd be kind of getting on the bus, and then a couple of stops later, I'd probably start crying and I'd get off the bus. All this kind of stuff was happening. So eventually I spent a lot of time getting the bus to work. And then eventually I kind of came to the realisation that I was going to have to start getting the tube, just because it was taking me so long. I lived so far away from where I was trying to get to.
Yeah.
And that was a really scary moment for me, because I just remember having a right panic. I started bawling, crying outside the office. I was really late getting there because I'd been on the bus. And one of the guys that I worked with stopped me and said, like, calm down, like, what's wrong? And I told them, I think I've just realised I have to get back on the tube if I'm going to be able to stay here and get to work on time and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So then I did start getting the tube again. And it was scary because I had to go through the station every day. So I used to sort of close my eyes when I went to, I used to get off the next station after. So I used to get off at Manor House. So as I went through Finsbury Park, I didn't want to have to leave that station. I kind of would close my eyes, go to the next station, and then get out and walk, kind of thing. So I did eventually sort of just get, I didn't know what to do with it. I couldn't really look at it. Nobody really knew what to do with me as well, because there wasn't anybody else I knew that had been shot and kind of had gone through this kind of trauma.
She had nobody to talk to.
Yeah, so it felt very lonely and very sort of scary time. I just wanted to kind of get back to my life and get back to work and kind of get back to why I'd kind of gone to London in the first place. And
right.
I just became very focused on my job and my career over there. But I did have help.
And you functioned.
I did. When I left the hospital, they put me in touch with a mental health lady it was the Whittington Hospital, and she would help me. So very much at those kind of early days when I wouldn't go out into the street and I wouldn't go back, couldn't get back on the bus and things like that. She was at the end of the phone and was sort of talking me through all of these things and making it all a little bit easier and a bit more manageable. The advice from other doctors as well was to stay and to, I think they were worried if I came home, nobody would really know how to handle what had happened. Whereas at least in London, they might have more experience with that sort of thing. So it was better to just stay in the system. And
how long did you stay there?
I ended up staying for another 6 years after that. So I got very much back in. I think looking back now, I definitely put it all into place in my mind and try to just get on with my life. Like they used to keep saying to me to like learn to live with it rather than try and forget about it. But I definitely kind of put on a big brave face, and I was doing really well in work. I kept getting kind of promotions and I kept getting new jobs, and I just really focused on my work side of things.
Right.
And I wasn't ready to leave London until I had got everything I wanted to get out of it. I just was like, I'm going to stay here, get as much experience as I can, and then it'll make it worth it kind of thing. So I definitely put it away, and I definitely found it hard to talk about at the time. Like I wasn't going to anyone. Like I wouldn't have been sort of complaining about it and going to wanting to get help for it kind of thing.
Right.
I sort of wasn't ready to look at it.
And then the next big event in your life.
Yes.
Was?
So then 3 years ago, my daughter was born. So yeah. Robin is three now, and she's great. I'm really grateful for her, because when she was born, it was like the trauma then, I suppose, of having a baby and like this whole new life that you're kind of responsible for. All of a sudden she came into my life, and I feel like all of the things I was kind of hiding away, sort of they all kind of came tumbling out, and I knew kind of immediately something was wrong. I think because I remembered the feelings I had after the shooting, it was very obvious to me, and I'd had a lot of anxiety kind of problems over the years, and I was managing them a lot with like meditation and things like that. So it was like that stuff wasn't working anymore. I was very immediately kind of realizing that the anxiety was back, and that I was quite panicky, and I just knew something wasn't quite right. So I made a point to, I mentioned it to one of the nurses while I was still in the hospital. I said, I've had a history of like anxiety and trauma, and I feel like I need to maybe talk to somebody. So they put me in touch. I stayed in the hospital till they were able to put me in touch with the perinatal mental health department in Holles Street, which was fantastic. So since meeting them, everything has sort of changed. They kind of picked up on it immediately. There would have been definitely symptoms of OCD from the past.
OCD?
So definitely that kind of thing from...
OCD standing for?
Obsessive compulsive disorder from when I just kind of always, but then these traumas were kind of bringing out those symptoms. So for me, it was sort of obsessive thinking and very much thinking and worrying about my safety. Couldn't stop thought. I was getting thoughts in my head, and I was kind of, I wasn't able to think of anything else but what I was worrying about, and it was becoming quite debilitating. So they picked up on those symptoms quite quickly, and I think they were very aware of the sort of post-traumatic stress stuff that was coming out as well. I sort of started talking about the shooting again. I hadn't talked about it in years, and so it was sort of obvious there was something underlying going on. So I became a patient with them. And over the past 3 years, then they've been kind of looking after me and sort of counselling me through this sort of time. So I spent the last 3 years very much in their care, working with the doctors, so Deirdre Madden and Anthony McCarthy there. So it's been a process of sort of getting a diagnosis for these things. So I was definitely suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder from the shooting. And then I was kind of suffering from postnatal depression because I hadn't dealt with the post-traumatic stress disorder in the past. So it was sort of a very scary time, when it was a very exciting new time of your life to be kind of going through all of these mental health sort of problems, which was quite scary. And you feel a little bit of ashamed about it as well, because you feel like, I've just had a baby, I should be really excited.
On top of the world,
I'm supposed to have, like, you kind of feel like you're supposed to, there's all this pressure to be having the perfect life, and like, what have you got to complain about kind of thing. And then at the same time, I was having lots of these sort of mental health problems. So I was having a really tough time. So it took a long time to learn to accept it, to learn to say, kind of process all of the emotions and then kind of learn to manage it and live with it. And I've changed my life completely since then. So
the thing about for some people it is that they must speak about things and they must speak out loud about their concerns. But for you, it came a different way and it came through your art.
Yes. Yeah.
It was a visual thing. Yeah. Is the way you resolved it with yeah. those that were helping you.
I think especially Deirdre Madden in Holles Street, she kind of picked up that I was creative and that I maybe communicated better visually than I was able to verbally. So I was very, very stuck trying to explain these feelings. So she sort of encouraged me to, I was kind of bringing images to her. I found a book that was Michael Rosen's Sad Book, and it's about depression, and it's like a lot of illustrations by Quentin Blake. And I read that book and I saw the images and I was able to bring that to her and say, I feel like this guy. Or I was also kind of with the OCD stuff, I was sort of seeing things were making me feel really uncomfortable, like certain things I was looking at would make me feel really sick, kind of thing. So I was sort of able to bring things to her and say, well, I saw this and it made me feel like this. And so she really encouraged me to start drawing down my ideas or my thoughts. And from then it was just like a eureka moment. Once I kind of started putting the images down onto paper, I was able to kind of confront them, and then they made them less scary. So I kind of took them out of my head. I was able to put them down onto paper. And then when I saw them, I sort of use humour a lot in my work as well to sort of help deal with these sort of feelings.
Yes.
So I was able to kind of look at them and the drawings are actually quite humorous, and I was able to kind of laugh at it and go like, well, why is that? That's actually not that scary now that I see it kind of on the paper. Other people might find that writing things down in a journal or something like that would help.
Yes.
So for me, it's very much like my meditation. If I'm worrying about something, the way I see truth with it is to draw it down onto paper, and then it kind of helps me resolve it. So it's definitely helped. That was brilliant. That was that once I started getting the art out, it just kind of kept flowing out of me then, which was brilliant.
And I gather both your mother and your husband say they have the real you back.
Yeah, I definitely feel like I'm back to my old self. Like now looking back, I haven't felt like I'm really happy at the moment. And just I'm really good at managing like my life now, and I feel like I'm myself more than I have been in. So this happened 10 years ago.
Right. Isn't it extraordinary?
So I've definitely, yeah.
That can have over 10 years. And that brings us to First Fortnight.
Yes.
Tell me about First Fortnight.
So First Fortnight is a really exciting festival. So it's on for the first 2 weeks in January. So it started last weekend on the 1st of January. And it's basically a really, really positive festival, all focusing on your positive mental health. So it's trying to bring out discussions and conversations about mental health and get people talking about it a little bit so that people realise it is okay to not be okay, and it's okay to talk about these things and not kind of hide them away. So I think there's still a lot of stigma.
Of course, yeah, we hear
mental
about
health
it all
and mental
the time.
Illness
yeah.
as well. So because the first 2 weeks in January can be particularly hard for people, like after Christmas.
Down in the dumps,
after all the excitement, and sometimes even Christmas can be very hard for people. So it's a positive spin on the first 2 weeks in January. So it's lots of really exciting events all around the city.
And you're all around the city. And where can people get information about that?
They have their website. So if you go to www.firstfortnight.ie, they have listings. It's really easy to navigate. They have all the events and you can click on them and go straight into booking your tickets. And a lot of them are free, but you will need to book the tickets in advance because they've become quite popular. They've over the last couple of years now, they've become quite a popular
right.
festival. So,
and you're also you'll be live drawing from
yes.
2 to 6 p.m. on Saturday, the 21st at Tuk Tuk Tattoo for a charity event.
Yes. So this is a new development I'm going to be involved in. So I'll be there live drawing for the day. So if anybody wants to come and have a look, we're going to be raising money for the first energy efficient school in East Africa, and it's so it's separate from the first fortnight, but I'll be there drawing for the day.
All
and
right.
We're going to auction off our pieces at the end as well.
Okay, I get you. Now, as well as that, you have a separate art exhibition, Friendly Giants.
Yes. So I had an exhibition in the Kemp Gallery in the summer. So it's my first solo show with them. Which was really exciting. So my whole, in my work for that exhibition, I was very much trying to give the symptoms of mental health kind of physical feelings. So for me, it's like, well, what am I left with after an event like that has happened? And trying to kind of use I like to use the figure to communicate those feelings and those thoughts to other people.
Right. Well, listen, I wish you well on that. And
Thank you.
Can see it. It's online right now.
Yeah, so it's on the First Fortnight website.
Yeah.
So if you log on, there's a whole page with the exhibition all on view.
Okay, well, listen, thank you very much. I can well understand the trauma of being shot at, and people would think of the physical consequences, but obviously it could shatter your confidence as well. Anyway,
thank
Emma
you.
Sheridan, thank you very much
thank
indeed
you
for
very
talking
much,
to
Marian.
Us.
Thank you for having me.
Podcast, the Marian Finucane.